Film Grok. This week we will be watching the 1975 spy thriller classic, 3 Days of the Condor, one of my favorite films. My name is Serge Dalpierre. To my right,
John H. Ruby.
To my left,
Tim McMillan.
To his left,
Curtis Nelson.
Before we get started, we have the film queued right after the Paramount sign has faded out. So as soon as it goes to black, pause it, and then we're ready to go. I will say 3, 2, 1, we will hit play, and we'll all be in sync together. So, oh, we'll go to someone else before I go all over this film. Curtis?
Yes, sir.
3 Days of the Condor. Do you like this film?
I love this film. I've only seen it all the way through one time. But as growing up, it's one of those things you would come across, you know, on the cable channels and things like that. And I was so young. I mean, I was born in 72. So, you know, I mean, you know, I didn't get to see Robert Vole a lot of his stuff until I got older. And then once I got older, of course, you know, a lot of people love the film. Sidney Pollack, blah, blah, blah. You know, and I was like, oh, well. As I became more of a fan of movies for movie's sake and got away from the childish movies of Star Wars and things like that.
All right.
But I was like, oh, I need to visit this film. So watched it, loved it, and thought it was great. And I still own it. And I watched it when we decided we were going to do it here again, probably about a week ago.
Still holds up?
It does. That's the amazing thing. It holds up wholeheartedly. It holds up perfectly. And I mean, you know, I'm a broken record when it comes to classic filmmaking whenever I see things that I love. And this movie, you know, if as I'm watching it again a week ago, I'm like, God, if Paul Greengrass were filming this, which I like Paul Greengrass, but if he was filming it, I'd have my Dramamine and all that scene. And whereas everything on this film is locked down, classically shot, great camera moves, great cinematography, great mood lighting, da-da-da-da, and, of course, the story. But anyway, so I like it. I love this film.
Interesting. Tim?
I dig it because it's classic 70s filmmaking. It fits that niche perfectly. I think it's prophetic. I think also as far as what, in hindsight, looking back to it now, and how it applies to today's world. And I know Curtis is a big fan of Jeremiah Johnson, Sidney Pollack, and Robert Redford.
Why.
And talk about a team, it'd be very interesting to talk about their body of work. But 3 Days of the Condor is an excellent jewel in their crown, I think, of their work together. And I think it's a very great 70s film.
When did you see it first?
With you. I saw it when you showed it to me. How long ago was that?
You'd never seen it before?
I had never seen it before that time you showed it to me.
Wow. Wow, yeah. And that's a testament to that actually it still appealed to you. That's really cool.
Oh, it did.
Wow.
It did. And star power in spades between the two there. And it hits a lot of buttons for me.
John?
I love the genre of the guy that's not really the spy guy getting thrown into a situation where highly trained professional killers are after him and he's got to outwit them. And I totally dig that. And I think that's done very, very well here. So that's just really wonderful to see. And because it's a tricky thing, because how do you have someone that doesn't really be a trained professional get away
from... He's only read about these things.
That's right.
Oh, that does work.
But they do it, and they pull it off really, really well.
It's kind of like a less dramatic version of Anthony Hopkins in The Edge, where he's only read about these things, yet he succeeds off his knowledge, yet puts it into effect and is actually able to do it in the real world.
Yeah. Having never seen The Edge, I have no idea what you're talking about.
The same thing. He's a man of knowledge, and
he's challenged to use his knowledge.
Anyway,
interesting. Sorry. So, when was the first time you saw this, John? Do you see it in the theaters?
A while ago. No. I didn't see it in the theaters. No, I think I was just chewing up all the popcorn stuff back then. In my heyday youth.
Right.
No, I mean...
you just saw it on cable?
Yeah, on cable sometime,
Wow, that's interesting. Okay.
It was probably a while ago, 15 years ago.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah.
I saw it... I saw it in the theaters. I went and saw it, and I loved it then. It was just... I mean, it's quite shocking then. It's just as effective and fresh, you know, then, especially, than it was today. And I got the book. The book, it was based on a book called 6 Days of the Condor by James Grady, which of course I dutifully read, and it was a little different. And actually I picked it up, I think about a year or two ago, and reread it. I don't remember much about it, but they changed a significant amount of stuff in there. And not to spoil anything for anyone listening to this, but in the book, the girl dies. And the girl's a lot different. The girl's like hippie chick or some sort of like that. And it's a lot different, of course. Obviously, when they did this for Redford, obviously a lot of things were changed to work with Robert Redford's personality, what he could bring to this.
And what year was the book published, do you know?
Probably like 73 or 74, something like that. The movie came out in 75. So I loved it. I mean, it was great. And then I don't think I ever saw it on cable. I think I just saw it, would watch it occasionally on video here and there. And, of course, when it came out on DVD, that was one of the first things I got. And I was like, oh, I've got to get that. I mean, that's for my library. Mm-hmm. I think it holds up and stacks up so much better to everything else. And I can't even remember any of the other spy thrillers from that decade. I know there must be some, but for some reason that one just comes back and it's just so effective.
Well, it's so based in reality. I mean, even like as we'll see, the fight sequences are real. The spies are real. There's not any over dramatization of craziness action going on. It's like, you know, when guys are running, they're really running. It's not like they're leaping over walls and doing all this. And when they're shooting, they're vulnerable. And,
right.
You know.
And he's also real in terms of he doesn't really. He doesn't shoot guns. I mean, he's basically, he reads books, and that's what he does, and he analyzes. So, anyway, but we'll get into more of that in there. But I keep on coming back to this thing and love it. Okay, so let's say Tim?
Yes?
John's pointing at you.
I'm going to point at John.
John, you have something to say?
Let me say, maybe I am. Maybe I'm just projecting what I wanted to.
I think you may be.
Just quickly about the structure, it's really fun, and I'll point out they do something really, they hit the points, but they do this one scene drastically in a way that I've never ever seen before, the 45 minute scene that foreshadows the ending, and I'll point this out. It's very done in a very fun way, and it's almost blatantly obvious, but it's not because it's done in such a different kind of way. So
I'm seriously looking forward to hearing the structure points and how it all fits in with how the movie works.
Yeah.
And going back to the book really quickly, obviously the book differs from the movie in the sense the movie added the whole subplot of what everything is going to be about. We'll talk about it as it comes up later. But all the stuff at the end about what everything is really about, that was added on. That had nothing to do with the book. I don't even remember what the book was about. But, I mean, the basic thing was, you know, the whole beginning part and inciting incident and all that kind of thing. So on that note, okay, so we're going to get ready to go. So pick up your remotes, and I will count down 3, 2, 1, go. So 3, 2, 1, play.
Play.
And we have the music of
Dave Grusin, had a partnership through Sidney Pollack's films. He was Sidney Pollack's composer of choice, just like John Williams would be to Steven Spielberg or James Newton Howard to M. Night Shyamalan.
Watch this. This is one shot.
And
it's great.
Yeah. And you got to love these old scanner thing. It's really cool.
It goes, it lifts up.
And the typeface of the credits.
Yes.
Oh, very,
very, very Universal Studios.
70s. Actually, this the typeface I think they used in the Anderson tapes with Sean Connery back, I think, in like 70, 71. And look, this whole shot is going all, it's one continuous shot that goes all the way around. And what it does is it sets up the space in this office very cleverly, because that's the thing. We don't spend much time in this office. They set it all up, and then we're gone, I think, within 10, 15 minutes. But we know where everything is.
And her glasses are really way cool.
Well, they're 70s.
Yes.
Everything's way cool here.
Yeah.
I love the music.
It's great. Got some funky 70s rhythm.
Now, John Houseman had a career revival with The Paper Chase back a few years before that, 1972, and he won the Academy Award for Best Supporting Actor for that. And so this is, I think, the next role that he had.
John Houseman, Rollerball, 1975, same year as Three Doors.
That's right, same thing. Oh, that's right, Rollerball. Now, John Houseman, of course, goes back to he worked with Orson Welles back at the Mercury Theater
back
in the day, and he hadn't really done acting in quite a while. Fred Steinkamp as film editor.
He's got the editor hat on. Hey, how you doing? The green visor.
And, of course, Joe Turner is late. I mean, everything is planted so well.
And also just the Einstein poster is really great.
It's a 70s film, so you got to have smoking.
And now you see, of course, he comes down the stairs, and we see where the front is, and we see the woman who lets everyone in.
Yeah.
And, of course, there he is on his little moped.
Which shows that he's different than everybody else, all the cars out there.
Love the cars.
Yeah.
I can only imagine.
As my mom would say, look at all the old cars.
Mom, it was 75.
And so.
And now here they're working out like the different scenarios.
Yep.
And they can't figure it out.
Right. And the first thing you said is Joey's not the only one with a mind in this place.
Yeah.
Because she was going to say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can only imagine in 75 how shocking this film was to an
later
audience.
During the murders?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you hear imagine? This opening music. Listen to it. We're having a good night at the movies.
And everything's cool and everything. Lorenzo Semple.
Yes.
Mary Tyler Moore music.
Owen Roisman, by the way, was the DP on this. Owen Roisman is awesome. And, of course, what they do, they pull back and say, okay, we know something's up. Open up the clipboard. Who's Martin? Oh, Martin's inside.
That's right.
Okay, that's, you know.
Hey, you got an old headshot there, Redford?
Yeah.
I like the fountain pen. And, of course, Ralph Heidegger at the bottom. Yeah.
It would have been nice if they would have had pictures of them on the street as opposed to headshots. But you know what that means, though? It means it's an inside job because those pictures are actually from...
True. That's right.
So that actually makes sense.
So, of course, now he's playing around. He's the one who's always has to be different.
Yeah. And
he's not the serious guy.
Yeah. I always like that statue right there at the base.
And here
stage.
We see, of course, it's the revealed she has the gun.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nothing wasted.
Sidney Pollack started out as an actor. And then went into directing. And in all his films, the way he handles his actors, I can tell he was an actor.
Yeah, like that. Like those shots with the three actors sitting there in the same room. It's like a stage play. They're just like the three of them there doing their little thing. Now
the report he just talked about is basically
the emphasis for the whole film.
Well, it incites the whole film. That's what started everything off. And, of course, we get some nice shot. Now, important, we get the nice shot up the stairs, which plays later.
Locations.
That's also
learning just your sets environment. Everything up so well.
Yeah. Also, the nice comment about the plant shows that he knows everything.
Yes.
Because the plant's not looking so good.
And, of course, they're working with trying to figure out the problem.
Mm-hmm.
So the next year we had All the President's Men, right?
That's right. Well, this was during Redford's heyday. He'd had All the President's Men was the next year, but he'd had Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid back in 68. He'd had his earlier career. Of course, he worked with Newman. He worked with Newman again in The Sting. He had his own films. He'd done The Candidate, Jeremiah Johnson.
72.
I mean, Redford was...
Yeah, at this time, there was nothing hotter than Redford for
Redford was it. I mean, you had Redford, you had Paul Newman, which was Steve McQueen, Charlton Heston. And then we have the solution for the ice bullet.
But even then,
bullet.
Heston had kind of slipped into the Omega Man films already.
Yeah, already. Well, he's going to the sci-fi ones. Yeah.
And I love this, how he holds her while he's drawing this.
So we know that they have a relationship.
Yeah, isn't that... Because, I mean, it's not obscene. It's just friendly.
You couldn't do that today.
We already found out that they're together. Yeah. They were a couple. Oh. It was already revealed because they're going to have dinner at the other guy's place tonight.
Yeah. And she's the one that defended him for being late. And he's on his way. So
right.
Oh, okay.
And so once again, he's going over.
Yeah.
Well, you still couldn't do it in today's workplace. Is my point.
What, date someone in the workplace
and hold them like that at work? That's sexual harassment.
You are correct.
Take it from a man that works for a corporation.
And here we have once again a mystery that he lays everything out for us.
Yeah.
This is a key scene, right? Start the scene.
Well.
It's all been kind of.
Yeah. Well, that you're just setting up the.
Well, he's laying out the whole mystery
the whole story.
For us.
You got 10 minutes to set up everything, and then at the 10 minute mark, it all gets really kicks in gear.
No way.
And at the time, how much different was it that he's got a relationship with.
That's great.
With an Asian woman?
Yes.
Yes. At the time. And now it's raining. Nice water.
What?
Terrace.
Oh. Computer time.
Oh, that's right.
Back in the day, you had to get
free time on the mainframe.
Yeah.
Actually, when you think about 1975, for them to have monitors like that was pretty big shit.
High
because
tech.
That was punch cards. It was even earlier than Punch Cards. And Heidegger is late, of course.
What is that on the easel back there, do you think?
Oh, I don't know. Oh, it actually mentioned Persian Gulf there.
Mm-hmm.
There. When I watched this a week ago, I was so surprised about how many things you're like, holy crap, that lines up right with what we're doing today even. I think they mentioned Afghanistan here a little bit later too.
Now, I'm wondering what this is about.
Oh, I know.
I mean, it's cool because it's Robert Redford. You can't mess with Robert Redford. You know.
Well, I don't know. It just shows another thing about awareness.
I was going to say, it just shows how
high. Oh, and here's the weather thing. Remember he also saying, said that it was going to stop raining.
It's
going to
stop raining. And it puts him out in the weather. And, of course, there's...
So now we know one guy didn't show up.
And... So now, of course, goes into spy territory. And this is so cool.
Everything I've read about Redford is he doesn't like to rehearse too much. He likes to keep it as fresh as possible.
Wow.
Barbra Streisand had some difficulties in the way we were because she wanted to rehearse thoroughly, and he kept it to where more just in the moment.
He's I would liken him to I was on what was the film he did with the guys that were shot down in the helicopter just a few years
ago. Lions for Lambs.
Lions for Lambs. I worked as a background guy, as a military guy for 3 days.
Yeah.
And I would liken him to Clint Eastwood as far as directing. He was very mellow, very calm, never raised his voice. The set was always really quiet. He was always smiling and happy and just walked right up to anybody. And there was moments where he'd walk up to some no-name extra and just put his hand on his shoulder and just... as he's talking to one of the other actors or whatnot, and just very
not a tense set, pressured.
And no pressure, and a man of confidence just walked around the set. And
I have to say, I like the sideburns.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've always, many of you that are listening might not know, I look a lot like Robert Redford.
No,
but I don't have a sideburns, and that's always pissed me off.
All right, so let me say something real quick.
Yes,
at about 9 minutes, what Robert Redford said to that guy at the filing cabinet was,
"Look at the cop up there. Actually.
He doesn't. He likes his job within reason." He said, "Well, what's the problem?" And he goes, "The problem is I don't get to tell people what I do." Mm-hmm. And he goes, "I trust some people." And Robert Redford then says, "I trust some people, and I know that's a problem."
Right.
And that's the whole...
Right. And actually, what he just does there, the interesting thing is because he's unconventional, he saves his life.
Yeah.
Because they would have just waited until he came back if they saw him come out the
door.
Right.
Or get him somewhere else, right?
Well, they wouldn't have known. Yeah. They don't know he's left. They think he's in there.
Exactly.
Them's a lot of books.
Yeah.
New York, back alleys. I always thought this was so cool. And it's just sound effects. There's no music.
Mm-hmm.
Nice thunder peel.
Nice rolling thunder.
Nice dog in the background. Oh, that's here.
Oh, damn.
And it is. Not,
and that's another thing, too, is maybe some of their other spies that would have been on other corners and things like that didn't seem also because the rain, he's covering his head.
Well, but it's,
so maybe on other corners where he might have maybe crossed paths with
but
them.
But they weren't looking there. I mean, literally, this is like on the other side of the block. And now with this, he's like living out, he's telling his lie.
Mm-hmm. And I love this whole exchange here. It's really fun. Yeah.
Oh, there's nothing like a rain-slicked street, especially at night. But during the day, we'll take it.
Here come the mailman.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder how much Redford absorbed from Pollock, just watching him direct, to apply later to his directing career.
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
How many movies did they make together? Like 7 or 8? I mean, they made a lot of movies.
Now, Roisman, did Roisman do The Exorcist?
I'm not aware of that. Okay. I don't know.
Well, I mean, Roisman worked for many years.
And that's nice to make sure we know where we're at. Director's helping us along.
I did not mind that zoom out. It worked, and it's the 70s. Yeah. But look, great use of telephoto.
And it helped us. It's kind of nice that this guy's just overseeing this one.
Well, he drives away, and then the reflection, and he walks right into it. Look at this.
Do you think that's why they had it raining? So that just for this reflection shot?
That's the only reason.
To make it look very cool.
Wow.
It's also pretty New York-y.
Is it pronounced Cito, Cito, Max von
Max von Cito.
That woman just, she's going to die of cigarette smoke.
Nah.
I really do.
I like this, how the camera just moves up to him in a very trusting way.
Gentle way.
And you don't see it.
Yeah, that's...
And the legs going up is funny.
That's, well...
Is it now, John?
It is funny.
It's him.
People dying is funny. And, I mean, I remember seeing this stunning in the theater. Yeah. It's like, what the hell?
Then, of course,
hell?
He knows exactly
the
where
violence.
To go.
I mean, the violence. Pollock did a great job.
He goes
job.
Right. He knows exactly where to go.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Boom.
And you know this is not going to end well.
That was a nice little stunt thing. He actually lifted up off the staircase, which was nice, and then came down.
Everything technically in this film is...
Yep.
Is
what's
way
interesting about
par.
It is it's not it's not too gratuitous, but so real that makes it even that makes it
well,
gratuitous.
What it is it makes it makes it visceral. And what
and
I like is that
nice.
You know
they missed
pass
her there. Yeah.
Oh, there's like, the punch. Oh. Here's the punch cards, and then all these people you've gotten to know, and then it's like, wait, what's going on?
Well, actually, all these people you were introduced to well to where you wanted to know more about them, mm-hmm. and you're cut off.
Absolutely,
cut short, and it's very disturbing.
And you also have just enough conversation that you know that they're nice people.
Hey,
you know
that's
I mean?
Where Quentin Tarantino got that
that's
shot.
From Paul, yeah, Pulp Fiction. He used that, exactly.
Yeah, son of a bitch.
Yep. And then now she doesn't know. I mean, just so
because of all the racket in the office and everything and the silencers.
Well, because of the computer, because the computer was on. And then he comes in and flips it on.
And then you just kill a woman like this? It's crazy. But I like how he just has that simple pause, move from the window.
And you see, that's a great shot. Well, I like the reflection in his glasses. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's the cognitive dissonance. It's like, what the hell is going on? And we've just been set up to expect everything to be safe, and nothing is safe.
Courageous woman.
That's nice that he looks away.
And nice. you see the ripple spreads. Spread. Right,
and what was amazing is they
pan
to that, they cut to that, and it's going the same direction as his barrel of his gun.
And I was just glad we didn't see blood splatter against the
paper. Exactly. That was good. Yeah. Exactly.
You don't like Eli Roth now?
And that, hey! And that's the craftsmanship, and it's just very subtle, but...
What's interesting is they cut to this scene right here, and now you think he's walking into the group still being in there.
Yep,
which is interesting that they cut ahead. That essentially they cut ahead in time without telling us.
No, that's nice. That builds tension.
No, it is. Yeah, absolutely.
We're off kilter.
We don't know.
As an audience, we're completely off kilter.
Yeah, we're
and
thinking
look,
he's walking
watch,
in.
Watch. Here. He's like, hey, what's going on? It's like, hey.
And I love that.
It's once again. It's
that's
the
honest.
It's,
because
it's,
he's
it's
so.
The, it's the cognitive
so,
dissonance because yep, you're used. Yep. You're expecting to see one thing and then. You have to process. Wait, there's something wrong.
But as a character, that's what he would do. Remember, he's always doing things that are different.
Oh no, I'm not even talking about Redford. I'm just talking about the movie.
Yeah. Well, and also, you just assume that someone's. He would never assume people got shot.
I just noticed
that a toupee.
Yeah, that was a toupee. I just noticed that for the first time. Yeah. He had a toupee on.
Yeah, that's very
now
nice.
That's detail.
Yeah.
Oh my god. And of course, we'd seen her.
So just real quick, as a script note, inciting incident would obviously be the mailman and those guys come in and kill everyone. That happened at 13 minutes. That really kicks the story forward. But then if you have 2 minutes of titles, that really happened more around 11 minutes and normally happens around 10 minutes. So we're right there.
I'm right on schedule. Wow.
And she's the only one he actually really investigates.
Yes, right. Which is nice.
Well, I mean, that's his girlfriend.
And he actually picks her up.
It's his girlfriend. And then he realizes, wait a minute.
And I'm sure the actress was very happy that he took her hair off her face.
I'm sure she was joyful to be working with Robert Redford.
Thank you, Bob. Right. Too bad I won't be in the rest of the film. And so, of course, she's like...
confined little spaces. We have a big camera on a dolly.
And
very
look
nice.
What he does here. Oh, I know.
I like that quick, real reaction. Then it's bam.
That's a great act. That is a great actor beat. Well, not beat. I don't know.
But and also notice how they're not showing us everything in quick cuts and all that stuff.
Yeah,
we're getting to see, like right there, we only see his reaction from behind, and yet he, awesome.
Yeah, it's a nice long.
I love the rhythm. I love the rhythm that Pollock does.
And how about no music, and all we have is that machine the whole time?
It's all sound effects.
Nice. Absolutely. We are there. We're a fly on the wall.
It's a little Hitchcockian there.
I mean,
actually, the whole film is Hitchcockian, an innocent man in the wrong place at the wrong time.
But it's visceral and it's believable. Whereas I have to say, about Hitchcock, I mean, the whole Hitchcock conversation is all different. You know, there's a slight heightening of reality here. Mm-hmm. The reality is made as about as real as possible. And he's like, yeah, I don't think so.
See, we're already learning how intelligent he is, but just little things he's doing like this, you know, going around picking up the phone.
And of course, now he's seen that the cigarette is still burning.
Yeah. Takes it out. It's wear enough to take it off her jacket. You know, I mean, it's crazy stuff.
Now, here's the one. Okay. He does one smart thing and he's one dumb thing.
Well, smart thing was he's one of the only guys in movies to actually take a weapon when it's there.
Yes.
Now, the dumb thing is why doesn't he go back out the back way
that he did before?
That he did before. Instead, he goes out the front.
Oh.
Where they might still be looking for him because clearly they would know.
He could go get help out the back way. Or just
he could just
flee.
He could just flee. They would never know that he was there. So instead, he comes out the front.
Point well made. That did not cross my mind before.
Now, of course, the music is perfect at this point, and the wind blowing, and he's basically alone now.
Did you hear that, Sydney? That was actually a good music cue. Good on you. All right, you have our approval.
May he rest in peace.
So, what is he doing there? Just deciding he's not going to take it.
Great shot.
He's just
classic.
He's not going to take his bike?
No, because he's got to leave everything. He knows he's got to leave everything behind right now. Oh. And then, of course, now you have the fake.
And he's already more aware of like, okay, now who's that?
The evil-looking lady.
A blind woman walking a baby?
The carriage.
I do not trust her.
She's going to pull out an M60.
That's right.
Super fuzz.
And, of course, he's trying to reach for his gun. There's got to be a cab.
Hot fuzz. Hot fuzz. Totally.
And it can't be a movie in New York without somebody walking in front of it. Hey, Mag, get out of the road.
I'm walking here. I'm walking here.
What, you got a problem?
So now he's trying to find...
Here's a point of...
This is great. Now, yes. Well,
no, what bugs
me... We're getting to the operator now.
Here's me, the athlete that's grown up now. It always bugs me when actors can't run, and Redford can run. I like it. Oh, so already I'm in the movie.
There you go.
Oh, no, he's the major, not the operator.
This poor son of a bitch, that's all he does for a living, sit by the phones.
But, and notice he's in a wheelchair?
Yes.
That's in the book.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Perfect job for him. His ass never gets tired.
Damage.
I like that hair.
He's like, oh, shit, you're not a payphone.
That's nice.
Now, also,
the guy was going to play hardball.
Two things here. One thing is he said, what's your handle? And then basically that depersonalizes him.
Yeah.
So now he's no longer, Turner.
Like Secret Agent Man.
But it also helps in showing that he's never used it before.
Yeah.
Which is
then right there,
he's like, what's your name? He's like, Joseph Turner.
Yeah. Right. See how fast he was? He already realized what the game was. Yeah. And he's like, Nightingale. Yeah. And he's like, now he's calling everybody by their actual code names.
Right.
Yeah.
I like that choice of doing that scene through the glass of the phone booth.
Oh, yeah. Maybe see, there's the wheelchair.
Rather than being inside the phone booth
without
an obstruction.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just like that. It, almost like he's in clothes. Mm-hmm. He doesn't know where to go and he's trapped. Or
I got to say, this looks a lot better in Anamorphic than it does on, you know.
Oh, yeah.
The Panascan.
Now, well, why don't they let him hang up the phone? Do you get that at all?
Because
they need to try.
Oh, keep the signal. Okay.
Well, keep it signal and then basically burn the line.
Okay.
Literally, they would burn the line.
Yeah.
And then I got our little second unit montage-y thing.
This is the cleanup crew.
He runs well.
An actor that can run.
He runs well.
I like it. Anybody that wants to see bad running, just watch a Nicolas Cage film.
Well, then maybe he shouldn't run.
Nick can't run.
Well, of course, you can't watch a Tom Cruise film without
him. He can move well and kick ass.
I haven't seen it yet.
But. Oh, you got to see Kick Ass.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And, of course, where does he go? The Guggenheim.
Why not?
I guess. I always wondered about that with the groovy music. Of all the choices, they went to the Guggenheim. Which was used in Men in Black.
And also, wasn't it just used in another one? What was the other one?
like this guy.
This guy's the chewing the gum. Mm. The guy.
Is that the Twin Towers?
Yep. Yes, and they have a bigger shot of him later. At the bottom of them, the base of them.
The wonderful Cliff Robertson.
This guy's just a... What's the tennis rack on the table for?
Oh, really? I didn't see that. There's a tennis... He's got a tennis
date at
lunch.
And look at
the
giant ashtrays on these tables everywhere you go.
Oh, he smoked back in the day. Absolutely. But getting back to the monitors, I mean, that was for 1975. Having those monitors on your desk, access the mainframe, big shit. Look at the modem on his desk.
Yeah.
With the phone.
Likes to read comic strips.
Now, here's a little plant. The music in the background comes back at the very end.
Mm-hmm. It's telling you it's Christmas time.
Salvation Army music. Pretzels in New York at Christmas time. Oh, let me talk to you about my Christmas movie thing. My theory is that it's a really good idea to put Christmas as a theme into when movies are made, because that way you can bring them out at Christmas.
Right.
Or as a Christmas theme music. So Lethal Weapon, Christmas movie. Die Hard's a Christmas movie.
Mm-hmm. You know the similarities in that are that Shane Black wrote those, and I asked Shane Black that one time
about Christmas.
I said, why do all and if you what was Long Kiss Goodnight was the other one he did?
It was a Christmas too.
Is that a Christmas movie too?
And that was in Christmas as well. And I said, why do you always put your films in Christmas time? And he goes, because I like to start from a place of innocence and then blow the shit out of everything.
Oh, there goes my theory. Yeah. Okay. Well, here you go.
That's what he told me.
Time of innocence for anything like this, and then everything goes to crap right away.
Yeah. Well, and either that or your theory could be true. I mean, if you're talking about for the rights to the film, the rights to the film,
not
or
for,
the
no,
rights
no,
to the music, I mean? Or?
No, not for the rights to the music. Oh, no. There's no money in that. No, in terms of. In other words, they'll usually bring out Christmas-themed movies around Christmas time.
I see what you're saying. Yeah. Ooh.
But if there's a Christmas-themed movie also, you can... more modern sense, if you make a seriously Christmas-themed movie, it sells each year at Christmas.
Right.
Okay. So if you go like Blockbuster or whatever, I mean, if you check Netflix, I'm sure all their Christmas movies disappear at Christmas time.
Yeah.
I like this whole neighbor interaction right here.
And yeah. It's like, no, not me.
That's great.
And that was very well done.
This
is very New York-y of him. It's like to be able to go, ooh, and stop and pause.
Hey, who are you?
That's great. Well, this is also when he put it together that it wasn't just the place he was hit. The guy at home was hit. So that means they wanted everybody.
This is actual Washington location. Yeah. Sorry about that.
That's okay. This is actual CIA place in Washington?
Well, that I doubt.
Okay, well.
And yeah, this is not.
Because they just don't let film crews in there every time.
But actually, those were downtown LA. Downtown.
Now, Tim, I've always wondered about this with film scores, that little that chime they always kind of do when they do transitions from scenes, but it's not part of the score. It's not like a score piece. It's scored.
It's a score.
But what I mean by that is it's just that little chime that goes from like one scene from one cut
to another cut.
Is there a name for that? Did that come from somewhere? Did somebody start that?
I'm not too up on that. All I know is that it's definitely part of the composer's work of being part of the score.
Yeah.
But what Sarah said, like a stinger,
it's a sting. It's a sting, yeah. Now here, this is interesting that he chooses to still try to go back to his place, even though he's been to Heidegger's.
Mm-hmm. And I liked how that scene started with him trying to hide in that tree, kind of like, you know, just...
Well, they could shoot through the tree and
it
looked really
good.
Well,
it looked really bitching, but at the same time, it has a character place.
And I like this little film, sleight of hand. She looks and he's gone.
Boom.
I don't get why he went home,
here
though.
There you go.
Well, but that's my point. Why did he go home? Why did he think that if they went to Heidegger's place, they wouldn't go there? Look at that.
Twin Towers.
Twin Towers. Now, this is, Section Chief
Man,
Wicks.
Look how high
and that's
is.
The Brooklyn Bridge. Wow.
Yeah, that's nice.
I wonder if that's a, what do you call it? An actual shoot. I
mean, oh, look, his number starts with 555.
Yeah, rotary days.
Hey,
two.
That's right. Probably they shot some stuff there and some stuff was shot on a set.
No, but like that had to be a
location.
What I'm saying,
that
was
a location, but I wondered if that was Twin Towers.
What I'm saying is if they shot the Twin Towers, they shot actually there, they could have had
Empire
done two sets.
Mm-hmm.
That looks like they actually did shoot there.
Like this could be a stage, maybe, but the other one where he's looking out the window.
No,
the
parallax when they panned over betrayed that, so. And here he is. He's like,
yeah, see, now he doesn't trust anybody.
Yeah. Now, since we've all seen this, we know that guy's a bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting they just keep the tension up, but you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
See, so, yeah, I like that he was smart enough to correct him.
Mm-hmm.
Redford's backlit in the phone booth with nice fill light on his face.
Nice. Oh, no, it's very nice. Roisman did an awesome job.
Well, he's the golden child.
Hmm. Ooh. Now, an important thing to remember is that, you know, this is all just post-Watergate, so there was a lot of paranoia about what exactly was the government doing. What kind of things were they running? But also, you know, Vietnam.
Well, this is from what I've read, this was a very passionate project for Redford, too. He's always been very much into...
He just said, fuck.
Oh, my Lord.
That was big.
Well...
Big for him to say, absolutely.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, going back to that, I mean, Redford's always had a political opinion that he sometimes will put forth in his movies and stuff. And this, to him, was a big one.
The 70s were a great time for film styles and how the studios let artists go about their work and do it without meddling.
Yeah.
Compared to the corporate filmmaking
was
today.
Was it Columbia that did that? Like one of the books I've read on the back stories of Hollywood and stuff, and maybe it was Columbia. Maybe I'm just going crazy. But the owners basically, when they bought it from the whoever owned it at that time, and I'm totally screwing up the story, but basically said, you know what, we're not filmmakers, we're businessmen, so let's hire filmmakers and let the filmmakers do what they're supposed to do. And that's where Easy Rider came from, and those movies of that such. They just basically let the actors act and writers write and the directors direct.
That actor right there getting the jacket on, I don't know what his name is.
The one on the left.
The one on the left. But he actually shows up in The Parallax View, which Warren Beatty did back in 1970, directed by Alan J. Pakula.
Hmm.
Yeah.
As
a bad guy.
It always hits me when I watch a 70s film like this, seeing all the familiar faces of the 70s, of character actors that you'd see from one film to the
great
next.
Shot.
And you're like, wow, whatever happened to this person? Whatever
exactly.
happened to this person?
And I'd seen 3 Days of the Condor so many times, and I went back to Parallax View, which I'd seen back in the 70s. It's like, that dude's in that one too, which is cool.
I like how he put the flight jacket, the bulletproof vest on backwards at first, which really showed that he never did this before.
That's great writing.
I like watching.
I don't get this. What do you do that for?
He does it as a distraction. That's why, because it's an
I just like watching 70s films for the realism of a dirty alley looks like a dirty alley.
Yeah. Mm. Well, art department did a very good job.
Probably didn't do anything. Right. Oh, looks perfect. Leave it like
that.
Oh,
well.
I'm joking, but.
Hey, art does a lot of work.
Well, that's what I liked about District 9, because when I saw that, I was like, oh, they didn't do anything. This place is just hellacious to live in.
What year was The Sting? Was that 73?
It was 1973.
Okay.
So I think this was the film he did next after that. Hmm. And The Sting was huge.
That was huge.
Best film of the year. Oh, it's a great scene. I like how it tracks back with him.
Mm-hmm. I love the depth of field.
Yeah.
Nice soft background. And now
and
he's soft.
Forward.
He's soft in the foreground here. That's great.
And I mean, this is perfect.
Well, this is also good. It's
now,
also
and
good.
Now and now he's figured it out. He's figured it out. Of course, it's wrong. Boom.
Ooh.
Oh, did you see the woman running? Holy crap.
That's a nice shot.
And he's left-handed.
So to speak.
That's tough.
Ooh, tracheotomy.
But it was also great because it put him, it put Robert Redford in a position of power and knowing even though he was being set up.
Yeah.
Like he noticed that something was wrong and he said, where's the other guy? And then he came out.
Right.
So it didn't make him total victim.
And now this goes right into the essentially this goes right into Act Two. Right into Act Two. I don't know.
Yeah, this is it. Yeah. That's now he's in a whole new world.
It doesn't waste any time and he goes
shopping. He knows now that
now we know the seriousness it chases on
into the store. And now we're right into the next part.
Now he knows he can't trust his people.
Faye Dunaway. It's immediately.
I did notice when watching this a week ago that you see the beginning credits and it's like Faye Dunaway's stylist, Faye Dunaway's hairstylist.
Absolutely.
It's like everything. It's like her designer, and it's like Miss Dunaway's, and you're like, okay, does she get a couple more credits to people that shoveled her shit before them?
Well, it's like
top caliber talent.
I don't remember. Now, hang on. I don't remember the credit. I think the credits at the end, there's very little, few of them, so that's why everything was front-loaded on the front. Normally, all that stuff would wind up in the back in more modern films, and that's why it becomes more noticeable. But with bigger stars, especially with female stars, it was important that you bring your own people to make sure that you worked well. I mean, obviously, we'd be in concert with the whole film, but they made sure that you looked good because you were essentially a product.
And this would be the year before her huge network win.
Network, that's right.
Boy.
I mean, this is when she was still all big. And she'd just done Chinatown.
Mm-hmm, 74,
which
right?
Incredible, yeah.
What an amazing few years.
She was the big one right here.
Oh, they were all really big, and they just made such great films that have lasted.
Yeah. I know I've read stories of this time and her, and I just can't recall any of them right now, but she was the shit.
This would be the time to recall them.
That's right.
I didn't really want to study up and be false. I like to improv.
So really quickly, Owen Roizman, I'll cover for you. Owen Roizman did indeed shoot The Exorcist.
Mm-hmm.
He shot The French Connection, another Oscar-winning film.
And great lighting on it. Well, I mean,
The taking of Pelham 1-2-3. The original with Walter Matthau. The Stepford Wives.
Ah, good old Stepford Wives.
I like that.
Network.
Wow, so he went from this to Network.
He shot Tootsie.
Ah.
Sidney Pollack.
True. And he shot Grand Canyon. He did shoot Wyatt Earp.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. The remake?
Oh, it's a nice shot.
What we're looking at, they're driving in the vehicle. I love any shot that is not a rear screen in a studio.
That's a process shot.
And with the bridge going over the top is nice.
And it's nice that they go from one car to the other, and this car is going vertically in the elevator.
And 12, nice because there was 12 disciples.
The yellow
pick up on
represents...
That, John,
John thank you for that... I like the car.
It's all biblical.
Yeah, exactly.
Once again, my mom would say, great old cars.
And the Marines represent one of the apostles, right?
That's right. Another video camera.
I like that the whole thing is like they're in a place where you could never get to, and it still says Five Continents Imports Inc.
Yeah, just so you know.
Yeah, just in case you stumble into it.
If you accidentally got this far,
all the Marines, yeah. There's still Five Continents Imports Inc. And you see the Marine in there.
You're like, oh, honey, this isn't the CIA office.
Oh, wrong turn again. That's damn it. Right.
We're always Five Continents.
This guy's like, I got a plush job, hey, baby. I'm riding this out to my retirement.
Eastern Airlines.
Yes. That's hilarious.
That was the way to travel from Washington to New York. That was the shuttle.
Was it really?
Oh, totally. Took it many times. Well, Washington National Airport.
Bought out by JetBlue.
Just kidding.
What? Actually, it looks just like Burbank.
Yeah, it kind of does, doesn't it?
You know what? No, that is
it has to be Washington.
National.
Yeah, and I thought
that was a rifle.
I thought that was a rifle.
I know. I was like, wait a minute. You just walked past the man packing.
Now, does anyone know, is this Brooklyn or this is Queens, right?
Well, those were the Twin Towers behind them.
That looks like Queens, yeah.
I that's another thing. I mean, just nostalgically, you look at these films and you see all these old cars and you're like, this is awesome. Mm.
I don't know what kind of car this is, though.
Well, he's doing a nice job with all the shots to really keep establishing and reestablishing where we're at.
But that's what a good director does.
Should have said hi.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I'm getting cold just watching this movie.
Man, it's working.
Have you noticed, though, that like Redford's attire, you could have put him in a time machine and brought him here to this time, and it fits as far as his actual dress.
Right.
Right.
He's wearing a dress?
What?
You didn't know that about him?
Now, here's Here's John Howard.
Who's this guy?
Smack your face. Look at that shot. It's very nice.
Did anyone ever deliver dialogue like John Houseman?
No.
I mean, his cadence and style.
Mm-hmm. Now here we get great opportunity to get essentially exposition on Joe Turner. It's all dramatically
driven.
Thank you.
See, I'm of the thought that John already knows what's going on. He knows the story. He knows he's innocent.
He knows there's someone in there. Well, yeah, that basically that there's
Redford didn't
there's
do anything
someone and, in there that's basically setting him up.
Yeah, but he just goes through the steps. He does everything he needs to do and lets it play out.
And notice how the enemy is basically right there.
Yeah.
So Houseman went from one evil mastermind to the next in Rollerball. I mean, he just went from film to film. He's basically
the same. Well, he's not evil in this one. He's basically heading everything
he's evil,
up. In Rollerball, he is evil.
I love his monologue later when he talks about war. And later. So
oh, that's right, when the two of them talk.
Two of them talking, yeah.
Oh,
just when you think the world has changed or gotten worse, you know, we always say that, oh, you know, I mean, times are getting worse, but you look back then and they still had the same conspiracy theorists. They still had the same thoughts of,
I know,
let's do this. And they're talking about leaking information. And all you read about now is like, oh, well, this was leaked about this in order to incite rage or world goes round and round.
Yeah, and I like phenomenal. Here how they still have the dialogue going and cut to here.
Cut to her, yeah.
So now we're already in her apartment on a set, but it's okay. I buy
it. They keep their voiceover going. That's nice.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Apparently that's a technique that D.D. Allen introduced.
Hmm.
Who recently passed away.
That's very nice. That's good writing.
She's got some great lines in this film.
Are those the Harry Potter books on the...
Yes, they...
Oh, no. I think she'd be a Tolkien person.
She's a photographer.
Oh, good. She's doing research for Eyes of Laura Mars. Yeah. She's a photographer.
See?
I love the fact that she never answered that question, too. She was too busy looking up a phone number.
She's really... What? There's a syndrome whenever somebody falls in love with their captor.
Stockholm.
And, as you might see here in a minute.
Mm.
Well.
Mm-hmm.
That's a nice line, because that's an unexpected line. It's not enough.
Yeah. Well, he's playing basically the fallible hero.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. If anyone's doing acting classes, this would be a good thing to lift for a scene. And, yeah. I mean, it's a very much a stage animal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is good.
Between him and her, a two-person scene.
I always liked how Redford had neat but messy hair.
Yes.
It looked like it never was combed, but it looked like it was combed.
Yeah.
And he still has the exact same hairstyle today.
Does he? That's
exactly. Good. I was like, wow.
Did you ever see the Twilight Zone episode he did?
No, I haven't. No.
He played Death, and he comes to claim this old woman.
Oh, but yeah, but he was more of
Death
a
is so beautiful.
Yeah.
Instead of the Grim Reaper.
It's an easy
It's one
transition.
Of the first things I ever saw him do.
I like how he's still holding the gun backwards, like he's not holding it, but he's just hanging onto it. Oh, the old radiators.
It was nice of her to come into the house and turn all the lights on.
That's because
there's a skylight too.
So. Was, but that also keeps that makes Tim not get bumped by the lighting change.
I was just going to do the skylight thing.
It's not. No,
and the skylight's hard because she lives in the basement.
There's some variation in the lighting.
It's not flat, no, but she has a lot of light on, I would think. Yeah. I don't know if they'd have that much light on if he's trying to hide.
Would you say there's a screen on the lens in the camera? Yeah. What do you call it?
A filter?
Filter?
Yeah. No, they don't soft light her in this. No.
What's her name?
That happens later.
Diane Keaton, boy, when she got older. Put some more Vaseline on that lens, please.
This whole nap thing is interesting.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you're exhausted. What do you do?
Look at the tapestry. It's very interesting.
The tapestry?
On the wall.
That is a nice tapestry.
Well, I ask myself, why did they pick that tapestry as opposed to another one?
It's interesting, too. If you're putting yourself in her character, like, what must she be thinking and the anxiety going through her? They set it up really nice by having this and... You know, it doesn't hurt that Redford's saying it and not Steve Buscemi.
Yes.
But,
exactly.
That is very true, man.
I'm going to fall asleep with this gun at your throat. Don't do anything.
Mr. Squirrely Eyes.
And when your arm falls asleep in 30 more minutes after being behind your head like this, you wake me.
That's right.
Dunaway was born with a face film.
She was.
That face photographs beautifully.
And I think he had a good line. I don't remember. No, maybe it comes later when he says, yesterday, I don't know, I don't remember the line.
Yeah.
Nice on-location shooting. This is one of the bridges over the Potomac, heading back from the Jefferson.
Mm-hmm.
So this is going over, I don't remember what street that is. But
when you're seeing these scenes now with Max von Sydow, you know... the ending of the film, and you're like, oh.
Yeah.
It's interesting to hear his dialogue now when you know the outcome and what happens later.
And also what's really nice is he gives us an out for how Robert Redford's going to survive for a while. Because he says he's an amateur, so he's specifically not going to be
predictable. Yeah.
And so right there, we go, okay, Redford's got a shot of staying alive.
I like how they switched right there.
He switched to French very well.
He's Russian, correct, in real life?
I thought he was Swedish.
Swedish. My bad. I apologize.
He was in The Exorcist also.
He was great in The Exorcist.
Yeah.
Greatest story ever told. That's the first time I think I saw him.
That's right.
Then, of course, The Seventh Seal.
He worked with Bergman.
Let's not forget his greatest role of all time.
What's that?
Flash Gordon.
No.
Ming the Merciless.
Close.
Oh.
What?
He played the king in Conan.
Oh, yeah.
He sent Arnold on his quest Now, let's not forget these things.
Mm.
Just kidding.
Okay. Sorry. All right.
But Ming was a
Ming the Merciless.
That was another classic. Dino De Laurentiis.
Dino De Laurentiis, yeah.
Film. Oh, that's right. This is Dino De Laurentiis.
Here we go, guys. Here's the 45-minute scene.
Okay, and what we do is we get the TV report.
Yeah, but what's going to happen right before the TV report?
We're going to see Eastern Airlines commercial.
And what are they saying?
For any kids under 25 years old, that's a television that is not digitally
what are they singing,
transmitted. It actually has. Those are rabbit ears on top of the TV, kids. That's how they got reception back in the day.
What are they singing, John?
You got to be free. You can get away.
Ah.
I was going to say,
you got to believe you can get away.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay, so it's like right in the commercial is right in there.
Yeah,
that applies.
Exactly.
I like how that was all one shot. The pictures, yeah. pictures.
Now, this was interesting. The whole thing of having her be a photographer and she takes lonely pictures.
Mm-hmm. Well, you got it.
And she, in other words, she's the one that he finds, as opposed to anyone else, other character they could have written, but that's what they wrote.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is obviously a setup for how intelligent he is of noticing things.
Yes.
And he's able to read her and find out a lot about her just from her artistic merit
and
choice.
This also actually sets up that they hook up.
I'm wondering how many women of the time were like, oh, man, if only Robert Redford had
come
in
my apartment
and seen my lonely artwork.
Look, there's a setup. There's the
the poker.
The poker, that's right, which plays later. Yeah. And now here, of course, we get the report.
When he pokes her?
It's not easy.
Dude.
Easy.
Dude.
Oh, sorry. I'll get it out of the gutter.
And that's what TV reception used to look like.
And those two metal things on the back, kids, are what.
And right there, they've covered it up, and he's just like, "What? Look at these shots."
And you see her watching him, not watching.
And notice her composition. I mean, both he's in the right side of the frame, and then she's in the right side of the frame also, even though they stay on the correct side of the eye line.
So we're watching her, watching him, watching TV.
Right. Look, because they could have composed her the other way. I like the guns in his back pocket. Mm-hmm. And now he knows it's worse than it seemed. Mm-hmm. Watch out where you sit, buddy.
Yeah.
Shoot yourself in the butt.
He's like, you're so stupid. They're not going to say that.
And then he realizes. That's the only way they could have. She's like, you are nuts. I like the underlighting on both of them. Look at that.
Bounce cards.
I guess that's motivated from the lamps.
That bright light.
Yeah, the bright light there. That's practical.
Nice. That makes sense.
That is acceptable to him?
That's acceptable. I am appeased.
Yeah.
Where's that light coming from?
That's the catchphrase now of anyone who watches a movie.
Where's the light coming
from? Where's that light coming
from? Hey, what about that skylight? I just want to go back to a scene really quickly when he was Sam was getting his flak jacket or whatever, the bulletproof jacket, which of course didn't help. And basically, Wick says, you know, so Turner, you went to college with Turner, and so did your wife. Yeah, how did you? And he mentioned something about how he and his wife got along, which, of course, caught Sam a little off guard. That plays in just a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see that. That got a big laugh in the theater. The Night is Young.
Oh, yeah.
Big laugh.
Oh, that's fun.
It's kind of awful, but.
No,
it totally eases
it's
the tension.
Yeah, and also used in a. It's used in a way that's not normally used.
I mean, this is where I think maybe this film dates itself a bit is in terms of, I guess, you know, gender politics, in terms of, you know, she's basically thinks he's gonna rape her.
Well,
just in terms of like, well, you know, whatever might happen, and and she says the night is young. The way that's kind of played off. It's
no, no, no. It's real. No, I mean, that's, see, to me, that's real. Like when they do the latest, the last Die Hard, mm-hmm. which was not last Die Hard. Was the last Die Hard?
This is brutal. This is brutal.
Yeah.
But like, this is all real.
Oh, this is all real.
When Bruce Willis.
Oh, yeah.
And he has a teenage daughter now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
None of the bad guys touch her.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? That's where you get this sanitized bad guy thing. Yeah. Or, you know, Pirates of the Caribbean, you got pirates not touching any of the women.
Yeah.
That's not what pirates
they
did.
They touched each other.
There you go.
That was an interesting shot. Notice how Dolly passed the license plate number.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And then later they're going to come back.
That's exactly how the scene ends.
Max finds him.
Yeah.
Yes. That's a very nice visual setup, of course, and it's just...
Right.
It basically becomes unconscious. The craftsmanship and the directing in this is amazing.
How about the lighting right there in the night? Yeah, but practical. Good.
It's fine.
And this is a great elevator scene, too.
Oh, elevator scenes are always great.
Ooh, wow. I mean, when
it's a good old elevator, too. Those old elevators in New York buildings.
And I love... just how well it's written that she has no clue of what's happened. Do you know what I mean? This is just fantastic. And then he's...
And this was the dinner that was basically his girlfriend.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
Said we're going to go to tonight, yeah.
And she doesn't get it all by the way he looks or feels or thinks. You know, she just carries on, and that's just fantastic.
Well, that's a great actor moment right there before he rang the doorbell.
Mm-hmm. Take a moment.
Yeah.
Now feeling the weight of what he's going to to do.
Absolutely. Well, with that, and also he's got to deal with everything.
The awkwardness
of
the
situation.
Oh, no,
that's right. He forgot about the dinner. Yeah. He's just went over there, and then he realizes that she was cooking the dinner for Sam and for his girlfriend.
Right.
And now he's got to deal with it twice.
For the pop culture geeks out there, this is the mother from 16 Candles.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
She plays Molly Ringwald's mother.
She was also in a few other early 70s movies.
All styles come back around. Look at that watch. You could wear that today, no problem. Yeah.
I'm ready to say this is his best performance ever in a movie.
He's good. And I'd like to know how much of this is actor created or written whenever he does these little things or, you know, who comes up with it, the director, him, who, when he goes back and he turns off the oven and he does all the practical things an intelligent person would do.
Right.
That would know.
Right.
Yeah, it would be interesting to see if it was in the script. And this is just fantastic. That's just fantastic.
Yeah. And now, of course, we know that he's a killer, but we have no idea why he's doing or not doing what he does. Mm.
Well, I'm assuming he's just trying to...
Oh, no, we find out later.
Yeah.
I'm just saying in the movie, we don't know.
Right now, he's still trying to kill him.
Yes, he is.
He's still trying to kill him, but he says later, the reason I didn't kill you is because there were people around. Because he asked him that's why he didn't.
Yeah.
But I think it's after this
whole sequence is when he makes the choice to, you know what, maybe I can use him.
Yes, and that's right. He tried to sell him on
up
that.
Where I work and who I am.
Oh, no, that's way later.
Well, I know, but I mean,
I'm saying in this whole sequence, we wonder, why isn't he killing him?
Oh, I figured it.
But we don't get the explanation until later.
No, but my thought was there's too many people.
Well, he could have killed them in the hallway.
Yeah.
Those damn kids. What I love is there's just no overacting in this film. There's just None.
Yeah. He can't read them. He's trying to read them.
You're right. Exactly. Yeah. He can't. And so he knows he can't read them. Therefore, there must be something.
Yeah.
And then the tension that's built by the door opening.
Yeah.
Opening.
But see, this is where I didn't get, like, Serge, what you're saying. I didn't get why he didn't kill him here.
And but it's because
I mean, I guess it could be messy explained. To step. It would be messy to step out of an elevator.
Well,
and
he's
have
a
six
professional.
Feet.
Yeah. Well, and then all of a sudden,
the whole thing is
he does
explain it later. It's just when you're watching it the first time, you're like, why won't he do it? But this is where he's figured out definitely this guy is after me, and he puts on the hat just the way we saw him visually at the beginning. Like this.
Yeah.
I'm a little on That's edge.
Good. And he's like, I think he gets that I am not out for his interests.
Yeah. And this is the middle of the film. This is
at
55.
55. Okay,
and then 59 minutes is when he drives away with the Faye Dunaway's car.
This is like a better MacGyver than MacGyver. And one should always carry a tambourine.
You gotta love
and
the
what
tambourine.
What's in her left hand?
I don't know.
It's like a horn of some sort. $5.
I think Jimmy Walker auditioned for that role.
Dynamite! And so, of course, he's set up out here, and he was smart enough to know that he needs to keep himself.
Yeah, covered.
Covered. And there's the old sniper scope overlay. Yeah. That's an optical.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's smiling. He's like, ooh, this guy. Yeah.
He's nice.
He's
a little respect for him.
I think he had that when the elevator with that little bitty smirk when he left the elevator. Like, okay,
oh, so subtle. And boom. I like the shallow depth of field and how they use that with the lights. It's amazing.
Yeah, I'm not up on my film stock, but back in the 70s, the way they had to light that for these night scenes, I'm wondering.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about likely, if you're lucky, you had 100 ASA. If you're lucky. And he pulls at the scope. And I always thought this was dumb. Don't turn your lights on. He's going to know your license, which we saw at the beginning of the scene. Mm-hmm. But there you go. But
I like that little mumble to himself.
Yeah. What is it? 37 BHFM?
So that's the middle where the bad guy is worse than we thought, which means the bad guy's really smart, and the bad guy just found me, and the bad guy got the license plate. And so now the question is, what is he going to do? How's he going to respond?
Oh, there's
that. Oh, I'm sorry, honey. Did I leave you in the bathroom?
Actually, this thing in the bathroom, I guess whatever that...
Oh, that light thing?
With
that's
the light
cool.
in it, they have another one in the living room.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's actually, it's very good motivated lighting.
Well, look at the design of the wallpaper behind you and that thing to the right. And wow, that's 70s.
Oh, yes. Though it's better 70s than I sure as heck saw.
Oh, I was just running.
I don't blame the guy on the other end of the line. But he does come off as a bit of a jerk.
That's a good line.
Yes, got to laugh also.
I love that. I think that sounds so...
But she trips out on her.
Oh, I've been in the position where I've tripped out on women like this.
Well, I know.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Is that before you made a jacket out of them?
That's right.
Ooh. John?
I'm just kidding.
Before I bitch slapped him.
Yeah.
I like that right there. How he just mouths it.
Actually, interestingly.
Wait, is there even a generator in a car? Oh.
Yeah.
Like the alternator?
Alternator. Yeah.
Okay. So, actually, interestingly enough, this is at the time, of course, there were rotary phones and push button phones.
Mm. Love the light on their hair. Look at that.
Yeah.
Nice shot.
I really like her performance in the sense that she, it's like she knows she's kind of in danger, but she can still make fun of it somehow, which you don't
what do you
see.
Mean?
Defense mechanism.
Oh, she plays it very well when she makes her quips. Nice shot, yeah.
What'd she say that made fun of it?
When she said, I was held up.
Oh.
That's glamour lighting right there.
Yeah.
We have two movie stars lighting
in this frame.
And I mean, he was great for pairing up with everyone. I mean, like you said, he did The Way We Were. He did, did The Great Gatsby, which is not a great
film. That's a great look from him,
Mia,
too.
Him and Mia Farrow.
Right.
How would they match him up? He did Barefoot in the Park with Jane Fonda.
How many phones do you think they interviewed for this part? No, you're not good enough, sir. Going to detract from the stars.
Yeah, Redford in the 70s. Wow, man, that's quite a body of work right there. And who took it to the next level? I mean, as a director, and film festival Sundance, and his involvement through that. Right, wow, look what he did, and is doing great stuff.
I wonder what his favorite film is.
Of his,
Of his. Oh, I think this is where the line comes up.
So, Sayers, you would say this is his best performance on film for your choice?
I think so. I just consider it his best performance.
For Curtis, what's everything. Your favorite Redford?
Sneakers.
Really? I've never seen that. Oh. I've never seen it.
Just kidding.
Here,
that curtain has a nice collar touch.
Here it is. I don't remember yesterday. Hmm. That's such a great line.
Mm-hmm.
Today it rained. I mean, in terms of structure, this is the middle of the film. Mm-hmm. This is where it tips into, you know, I haven't been able to do anything and I have to basically go out and I don't know what I'm going to do to. Now there's a possibility of doing something. And it's just got this really interesting middle quality. It's just like, and which very few actors can play. He can do that. I think Clooney's capable of doing this too. Mm. And just playing right on the edge of everything.
I love how quiet this scene is. Mm-hmm. I love how everything just dropped down. And Faye Dunaway is doing wonderful right now.
And also,
as well.
You know, this whole scene really isn't needed for the plot.
Oh, but this is all character.
Well, but it is for their humpity hump.
Oh, no. Yeah. Yes, exactly. Without this scene, it wouldn't.
Oh, so I might as well throw you a bone.
And here's his line. There you go.
Right.
Let me surprise you.
Look at the lighting in her eyes. Mm.
And they lit his good side.
Yes.
If you notice.
Right.
Look at that one.
That. Is that from our...
That light is so bright coming through that
and
it's shining.
And it's just shining. And his lips move. I guess they're using a starburst.
Remember
are
the
they? Bondage, a bit?
That's why I never asked.
Starburst?
The mouth.
Or is it shining off his teeth?
But
Or maybe it's just a filter. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think it's a starburst.
or the flare. Yeah. Is that his teeth?
I think so.
I think it's his lips.
Maybe not.
His saliva off his bottom lip. Seriously, as far as no, as
it is. Speak, yes.
She's his now, man.
See, now the only thing I would have changed in this whole scene was him not untying her hands, because she was actually comfortable being tied up and being. You know, that's what he said. You haven't asked me this whole time to untie your hands. So she was comfortable with being, you know, controlled.
To me, though, this represents showing her that, listen, you can trust me. Him trying to bridge it. And he's not a dick.
Right. Now, in this sense, you know, I kind of feel I wish we'd known a little bit more about her.
Yeah. Mm.
Before this, and we never really get to see her act and against him and everything, but we don't get any true depth other than she was supposed to go skiing and then we have her photos and then
do get from the phone call, you get that she's in a strained relationship, you know, I mean, not again, you know, those kind of things,
right?
Like, we don't get to see her doing
she's
her work or taking the photos or anything like that.
True, but there's so much said of it, and I like the artistic idea of showing all these photos that she has done and using that in the love scenes. And then as I'm watching this, I always think, okay, who's the production designer that took all these photos or who did all these actual photos? And,
now this would
for
be
the movie?
It's in the credits of who did the photos.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, it is. Yeah. Someone actually, some photographer who did.
Yeah.
This would be symbolic of, I see loneliness in your photos. So we're looking at this, that she's not as lonely now, or she's just as lonely. And what does this photos do for you guys that we're seeing this at the same time they're making love? What does it say to you?
It just makes it okay that I don't see any naked body parts.
His comment was, I see loneliness in here. And she's turning away. She's not yielding herself to him. She's having problems. He's getting through all that loneliness.
Well, yeah, because I got the turning away as I don't want to look in your eyes. So you don't want you to see me, or I feel uncomfortable.
Well, I see as she's lonely and she doesn't connect, and he's getting her to do so. So do you see what I'm trying to say? Right.
I think they were just very pretty lonely pictures.
Yeah, she was lonely and.
I think you can extend into it. I mean, I know that's why I'm saying I think the character development leaves you wanting as to. How it expressive. I think they solved the problem very well with the pictures because it expressed the lonely quality of their relationship. Their relationship is basically based on anonymity.
He's the
guy who no one knows, and here he is, of course.
If you think about it, though, I could see it being very questionable in a woman's point of view of, here's this guy.
Oh, totally.
His fiance girlfriend was just killed. Mm-hmm. And now, I mean, from a guy's point of view,
no matter what anybody that with a good heart wants to say, or people that are a PC want to talk about, there's something very taboo and animalistic about what just happened.
These two
fucked after only knowing each other for 2 days, and they did it good. It's a big.
Has it been 2 days or was it 1 day?
After knowing each other 1 day, you're right. He's been on the run for 2 days.
Yes, he said.
To me, that was contrivance of. Element for movie stars in a movie.
Yeah. Definitely. I totally agree. It was contrived. But
now we have to have this section in the movie.
But it was one of
the
best.
For the women who may be in the audience.
Yeah.
Or
but
if they want romance.
But you know what? It was one of the best contrived love scenes that I've ever seen. I actually bought it.
What?
That she was lonely and that he.
And he was just looking for some sort of
release.
I felt it was a little strained, and I think that's where the question comes up. They cover it up very well with the pictures, but I feel it's kind of like, well, you know, that's just kind of thing we do in movies, and it is a bit of a fantasy, and that's where I think it departs
a fantasy
a little
definitely.
Bit. Right. Yeah, exactly.
But
it's Robert Redford.
I mean, you're not in enough danger to where you can't have sex now. Enjoy it. Yeah. So I gotta have sex while I'm fighting for my life.
I mean, it was the '70s, man. You know, people were doing it all the time.
Forget about it. All I can think of is Redford just woke up and his hair still looks like the hair.
And now we're getting we're catching up on the exposition, and now we're going to the next level of exposition, and it seems that it was Wicks who got it. So he figures out that Wicks was a problem.
Well, Wicks is the guy that was in the alley, or was supposed to be in the
alley, and shot Sam in the neck.
Yeah.
I like that whole sequence, by the way, we just talked over, which was of him putting all the clues together and going back and taking notations of what was going on, drawing his little diagram.
And also, if you now see she's wearing color, as opposed to...
Oh,
red of all things.
The flower is open.
Scarlet.
And she's turned on the coffee. Very important.
I like how she's pissed off at him. I like that.
I like almost they're already in a relationship kind of a thing. Like, what, are you going to go out and leave me now?
That's right.
You're not going to have breakfast?
Well, she does make a joke about everything in a second.
Yeah.
And then, of course... Help.
He's not ready for he's not in the mood for jokes yet.
Right.
All right, come on now. Really?
But she's continuing exactly what she was doing
the
day before.
Yeah.
She's the Rhoda Morgenstern of the story. If you watch Mary Tyler Moore, that was one-liners, baby.
Yep. See, I don't take that as quite as a joke. I take it as a bit of a dig.
With every joke, she's still digging into him.
Well, she's still being honest. She's saying what's
absolutely.
On her mind.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. I do not falter.
That's where sarcasm comes from, based in honesty. Take it from the most sarcastic sumbitch alive, me.
Well, basically, it's all passive aggressive.
Sure.
So they each got their chance,
and now she realizes that word, and she realizes she's gone over the line. She's like,
"Well, you know,
I'm sorry. I was trying to put levity in the situation, and I didn't.
Kind of asked for it, you know.
I don't think she's trying. I took it as that she was.
She called him a spy fucker.
Well, it wasn't levity. I think she was trying to dig him a little, but she dug a little too.
No, she realized, what?
That was uncalled for. Yeah. I went.
Oh, there's your innocence music in the background again. That's very good, Chad.
So
kudos
Wicks,
to Shane Black on this.
So here you go. The Wicks clue, you know, is right after the midpoint of, okay, what am I going to do? Where am I going to go? I'm going to go find Wicks.
And it's great that this is all off screen.
Yeah, that saves a lot of money, huh?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. All we need is
Who needs
nurses?
To see him take his last breath anyway?
And I love the fact how nurses are so calm about things like that. Oh, we have someone flatlining.
That's how they are.
I know. Well, it's a daily occurrence for them.
Yes.
I like this scene.
That much time hasn't passed.
I really like this scene. I remember the first time I saw this. This is a standout scene.
And what we were talking about before of the realism of, these guys are spies, but they're not ninjas.
Exactly.
It's not like, you know, Jason Bourne where all of them are perfect. You know, like, you know, I'm going to take a pencil and stab you in the eye. And
I like how the guy has a flower pinned to him. He's got a carnation or something.
I didn't even notice.
Is he going to squirt him with
it?
That's
not
the
carnation. It's the sheep's cloth. And, of course, it's the pen that doesn't work. And this goes back to how observant he always is.
And
of course, the guy steps in.
And to do this in modern times, they'd put some Russian-looking athletic dude that would never look like a mailman, whereas this guy, actually, besides the shoes, looks like a mailman.
It's like...
He does not have the black shoes.
Boom.
I love the coffee. And by the way, Quentin must have stole that gun from this... put into Pulp Fiction as well. It's the exact same
with the
gun that Bruce Willis kills Travolta with.
Damn. There's the poker.
That's nice.
I've always loved real fights where they stop and they gather themselves and go, wait a minute, we just had a moment of we're trying to kill each other. Oh,
nice,
this is what we're doing? We're doing this?
Nice push in.
Yeah, are we going to do this?
And he's looking at his eyes and he's checking them out. And he's like, fuck, this guy's really going to want to kill me. Mm-hmm. That's a great look.
This scene's just really well set up.
Yeah.
And pulls.
Yeah. The little flash thing was a little...
Pretty slick.
Yeah.
No, it works.
Oh, and then she comes in just for the half a second enough.
And... Yep.
And see how he also shoots the gun. He doesn't shoot the gun like some marksman, yeah, you know, yeah, that yeah, goes yeah. out there. He no, does shoot the gun. Yeah, and he's
real
pushing into it. Like he's not supposed to. Yeah.
What half second did she come in to help him for just 1 second?
What yeah. was
75-minute mark?
Oh,
you have
there you go, John. You
help.
Earned your
hey,
money.
What's a 75-minute mark?
You help from the universe or someone that you didn't quite expect.
Are
you
yeah.
kidding me?
Yeah. Nope. Wow. I'm not kidding you.
Are you really? You timing this shit out?
No, dude, job, that is freaky deaky.
It is.
Very good. Very good.
And now this is ultimately, this is what convinces her to help him, because clearly she has no more choice.
That's all I needed to find was that little key.
819.
You got the same key?
You have the key?
Oh,
dude, that's weird. Five continents imports. Now, remember we saw yeah, that? So yeah. now yeah. we know that we know. He, well, whatever connection.
See this? Ring of power. Ring of power.
Yeah, yeah. Now, interestingly enough, so we you know, this, of course, this is all detective stuff, and he digs how we can learn more about what's going on.
Yeah, it's very cool, and he's putting it together.
I like this.
Are you kidding?
That's great.
Now, this is the one thing I thought was like, okay, let's dumb it down for the audience just a little bit.
Where he asks for the area
he
code?
Calls the operator yeah. and says,
if he was that smart, wouldn't he know back then where every state had one area
code? 202, yeah, basically. Yeah.
And
oh, that's right, one state had one area code.
Yeah, I mean, it's like
Maryland,
maybe not
all
New
of
York.
All of Maryland,
what about New York in that time.
Well, New York was two. All of New York was 212.
Okay,
Brooklyn hadn't changed.
He may have. Well, that's true. If he knows everything, he probably would know
he'd
it.
Know
yeah,
B2
especially
that's
being in the CIA, yeah. he'd have to know.
So now, of course, he knows it's.
But you know, hey, we'll give him the movie. You got it.
All right, yeah. Okay. And this,
you're
is,
right. I
and
missed
this,
it.
This is where he finds
I missed
out.
It. The yeah.
All one take.
Yeah, nice pushing.
Yeah, and he just asked for Wixen, like, now he knows.
My thumb!
Do it again! Look at the back, seat, back seats of the back of the car seats. They're fantastic.
Okay, so now he's explaining to her what's going on. Yeah.
So now that way he can explain to us in case we missed it.
Exactly.
And she's in he's only in the rear view. I love this shot.
And this, yeah. Well, yeah, exactly. It's a way to basically recap everything for us.
Boom. Dirty.
Double a dirty.
And it's very natural in this film. It's not heightened. It's not cotton candy entertainment like, you know, maybe Hitchcock would be. But as far as the structure of putting an innocent man to find out why he's being hunted or why the threat is to bring an innocent woman to help him. I mean, it's very Man Who Knew Too Much, Hitchcock. It's very, you know, you can name so many Hitchcock films. It's the same
basic Eagle Eye.
Well,
structure.
Eagle Eye took on this. But, I mean, the interesting thing is now we've been introduced. Each time he tells a story, he adds a layer. Now he just added the layer of the whole thing about there being another intelligence network.
Right.
Within the – which it's like, well, right. I mean, every time we see – and that's the fascinating thing I think about this film and this character is you've got a guy who's thinking and he's taking us in leaps further down – and it's just so well. I don't think I've ever seen a film like this that's done that with a character who's led us in his thinking process somehow and let us see in and how it's.
Yeah.
He's basically solved. He's solving everything without condescending, and we want to follow him somehow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And in nice incremental steps, whereas opposed to some movies, they get to the end and they all have to have like a 20-minute conversation about how we got here.
Right. There's the towers, which at the time, I mean, this was
brand new.
This was they were relatively new. This was 75. It was like they'd been done in the late 60s. Late 60s, early 70s.
As you're seeing those shots where they're driving, that's another thing I loved about 70s films and things like that. They cleaned the window where the windshield wiper would be, but everything else was all gummed up and dirty and real. Now the whole window would be perfectly clean and sheen and shiny. And I like how she figures out where they're at.
Yeah.
And I wonder if he told her this.
Okay, well, that's the thing. Now, this is another thing. Now, obviously, I'm coming at it from now. But I think even back then, I don't think you could just casually walk in.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah,
that way.
Well,
that's where I think it's like a little.
Not
much.
Only that, but Jay Higgins' office is literally right down the hall from where she was supposed to go.
Yeah,
right.
As opposed to another floor or something.
Yeah. The tennis rackets.
I like the machine that's kind of like ripped open behind them.
But maybe that's the way it would be. I mean, seeing that they're the work under right under your nose, there you go.
There's a lobby.
Yeah. No, I'm okay with her walking around. I don't think security was always. But the fact.
Well, the fact that it was a CIA. Yeah. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if there were a lot of films that actually shot in the World Trade Center. Were there?
Inside, not so much. Outside, yeah. The very next year, King Kong.
Oh, that's right. Oh, this music is great.
Jeff Bridges Kong.
Love Dave Grusin's score.
Clearance Center on Stetson. Damn.
Ah, New York in December. I like the steam coming out of the street.
Mm. Barbershop.
Corned beef sandwich.
Interesting to start the shot on the sandwich and pull back.
Yeah.
Because mm-hmm. everything's meat.
Oh.
Of course, it wouldn't startle too. Yeah, I noticed, look how he kind of looked to his side. Like.
Mm-hmm. Sparrow hawk.
That's right, sparrow and a hawk at the same time.
And he's like, oh, great. I like all this, the smoking in the background. Now, for Cliff Robertson, this was important because his career was derailed for a few years. Or was that after this?
No, it was before.
It was before this.
Charlie.
It was a whole thing with Columbia, and I think it was David
Begelman. It was around 67, 68 that Charlie came out. He won the Oscar, and then his career got sidelined.
Yeah, because basically I had to do with David Begelman and Columbia Pictures and stuff like that. And this was his – he was able to come back in. They let him start acting again, so to speak. Yeah.
And for any kids that might be watching this, he later went on to play Uncle in Spider-Man.
That's right.
Was it Uncle
with
Ben?
Rosemary Harris, who played – his wife.
I do like how he threw him in one fail swoop into two-doored Bronco. But, you know.
And this is a great cutaway that just totally is all about character.
Yeah, I just love. I mean, I love how they get exposition in, you know, while delivering the drama. And it's still all one shot, and it's in a motel room.
Yeah.
Now, Serge, where does it start deviating from the book?
Oh, I mean, I think the whole thing just is a little different. Well, first of all, the book happened over 6 days. I think Condor also goes down to D.C. a lot earlier. Mm-hmm. There's a chase across the mall. All this stuff about the intelligence network is, I think, a lot more minimized.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a very good read. It's an easy read. It was better as a teenager than as an adult.
And that was the reference that Max von Sydow was saying. Another, a more important package had to be taken care of.
Right.
About Wicks.
Yeah, yeah, very nicely done. That's where it's great that it...
But they didn't beat you over the head with it.
Right.
You know, that's the great thing.
Well, it makes it makes us audience active because we get to put it together in our head.
Sidney Pollack did that a lot in his movies.
That's great.
He made the audience work.
That's
to piece things together.
Well, that makes us active,
and
that so much it makes it more fun. Yeah.
See, and the great thing is that the dialogue is never on the nose. It's never on the nose. He says, "What am I supposed to do?" And he just said, "I'm sorry."
Did you guys ever see? I forget how it's pronounced.
You're
the Yakuza. Yakuza.
Yeah.
Sidney Pollack. I know you did, Serge. But wow, I had to work hard in that movie.
Really?
To piece things together.
Yeah.
And Sidney Pollack really danced with not making things obvious and making the audience put it together.
And I think where this all came together well is they had a great script. They had Redford, and everything was really at the top of their game in taking everyone through, and also in terms of the subject matter, how relevant it was at the time. He leaves them.
But that's the great thing. I mean, look at how long those scenes were. They were long, lots of dialogue. Two actors on the screen.
Oh yeah, that was great.
It wasn't too much dialogue. It did everything it had to with economy.
Well, what I'm saying is so much stuff is spliced together nowadays that you're missing out on the acting actual happening.
Well, but also
the
in terms of camera
it.
Work, the can't you know they're always moving the camera on the dolly track. It's got to move it, move it, move it. And now he deepens even further.
And there's your messy windows, Curtis.
Yeah, got a little messy windows.
So
this is great.
And I like how this scene starts on the door. Does the thing. He does his thing. Comes back. Off the door. Shut. Scene over. He goes over. He turns the propane off.
That's pretty much.
He goes back to the door.
Yeah.
You're right.
And what I would consider that last scene with Higgins was really the end of the... second act, which means he was trying to get the information through CIA people, and that's when he finally decides now he's totally on his own.
I mean, oh.
He's not going to CIA for any more questions or meetings or anything else. He's like, I'm done with you guys. Because the guy told him, if there is a CIA within the CIA, even if I get you in, you're dead. So now he's totally on his own. This is the end of the third. This is the third act.
And I like that he was able to negotiate with that guy because he had the knowledge of reading.
Yes,
here it is. I've read this, and I know this is exactly what it is.
That's right. Yeah, there's the quote on the end of the key.
Yeah.
And the guy's like, gosh, most people don't know that.
Are you in the trade? That's what he said. But this is kind of high tech and kind of cool at the time.
I love it.
Patching into the phone system.
Oh, yeah.
Someone can figure out how to do with it. And
you know what? Modern day phone systems haven't changed a whole lot. They still use those boards like that.
Yeah. Here we go.
That was the 9 to dial out.
That's right. Now,
how good of a recording could you have gotten at the back in the day and actually been able to transmit it across the phone line and say, okay, what was this number?
I don't know.
Yeah, this he would do today on an iPhone. But at the time, this was so cool.
Oh, yeah.
And this goes back to the whole thing of the push buttons versus the rotary phones.
Yeah.
Which at that time...
It's also nice they did 202 instead of 555. I mean, whatever number they came up with was a DC number.
Well, yeah, 202 being a DC location. And that tells us, you see, that was planted for us. Now we know that 202 is DC area. Yeah. Well, DC.
Yeah.
Big difference.
Yeah.
Harold Thomas. Oh, you're right. It's not a 555 number. It's like 867-5309.
See the reflection of his notepad in his glasses?
Oh,
isn't that crazy?
Nice.
I did see something. I saw that bright glare.
Actually, you know what? I think this is his greatest performance. I think his next greatest performance is The Natural.
Very good.
That was good.
Who was the director?
I can see that.
Barry Levinson. And who was the DP?
Caleb Deschanel.
Caleb Deschanel, one of my favorite
DPs. Who did the score?
Randy Newman.
Randy Newman. Fantastic score, the hero, the home run score.
Oh.
I'm not going to sing it, but it's a great score.
Please don't sing it.
So I like this. I like this. Back then, could you imagine how high tech this is to be pulling this up on it?
Well, this is very, now that's very movie.
Ooh.
I like the font also. The font's like the font they use in the credits. You know, very futuristic. I mean, it's got a name. You can find it. I think I've got it on my computer somewhere. Yes, you noticed something, Tim?
The guy in the back that was doing the
I like they're figuring all this stuff out by the most remedial type of information. 35, hat size, 7.
That's right.
I know him. I mean, not personally, but it looks like James Naughton or...
The guy in the back?
Ken Olin, who's very young. Yeah, for some reason he looks very familiar. I'm probably wrong, but...
You know, I always found it interesting. Why did they show this as a negative? Why not as a negative image?
And exactly how do you find this type of footage in this time? But...
Well, that too. So this is all for very much for communicating information, but it's reality.
Right? Yeah, it's supposed to show you that Wicks and Lloyd signed off on.
Together. Yeah.
Well, they signed off on Joubert being dead.
Yeah,
and now they know he's not, or at least Higgins knows he's not. So
that means Wicks and the other guy, yes,
were using Joubert.
That was the same typeface as the credits of the film.
Mm. Yes, that was
on the computer.
Yeah,
that was. That's what I was saying.
Did I miss that entirely?
Yeah.
You zoned in on something.
Sorry. That's all right.
I did.
I have it on my computer. Yeah.
Okay.
It's got name. There's several different font types like that.
Its name is Harold.
Cool. It's not. His name's not Harold. It's like Future or something. Well, not.
Name is Benjamin.
Your name is Benjamin. And now it's in the phone exchanges again, and you get all that sound. It's very. The sound in this is great. The sound design.
He did that at the last phone call with Joubert, too. He had some clicking in the
major.
Background.
And I like how he confuses them by rerouting them to all these different locations. And,
yes.
You know, because he now knows they're definitely going to be trying to pinpoint where he's at.
Well, yeah.
And I like how this is played through from back to front.
And also he's telling them where to find Joubert.
I'm in control now, you sons of bitches.
Ah.
Somebody just swallowed their nutsack.
That's right.
Uh-oh.
Now, the only...
how he doesn't say anything.
Well, he can't.
The only thing that he could have done differently would be like, is he in the room with you? Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
But that's on the nose. And this, if anything, this movie is the dialogue is never on the nose, and you still know what's going on. That's the amazing thing.
Yeah.
And now, the point of stress for him, all his bosses are now sitting in the room with him, like, waiting. You better, you know what? We'll start helping you
and
out.
You see,
here
and
now.
Houseman's like, wait, no, I know what's going on.
And that's the most amount of color in the film is that the map behind that guy.
And then, of course, the Matrix.
Yep.
Ha ha ha! I like how he's saying it with his, with his accent. That's right. You know, he's, you never know he's from New York until that moment.
The only thing I didn't buy in that scene was that the three guys were sitting at the table waiting for that call.
With him.
How long they've been waiting there?
Yeah.
24 hours?
Well, it's like, well, I'd say it's likely they've been meeting.
Yeah, yeah, but with the major?
Hey, hey, give movie story a little bit of credit. We got to tell a story here.
Come on.
Joe.
I like the old style, the old train stations were like this back in the 70s. They hadn't been rebuilt yet.
It's a very nice location, yeah. It's almost Casablanca-ish.
Mm-hmm. Would it say Erie, Lackawanna?
Notice how everything in like the last few shots, especially, is everything's dark around him except for like neon signs or street lights. Like earlier, she was sitting, she was looking over her shoulder through the Bronco and through the doorway on the passenger side. There's like a, you know, a don't walk sign, but you couldn't see it because it was faded out through the window. It was just really nicely placed. And then in here, you have the yellows and the reds and the blues in the back everywhere, but everything else is dark.
Yeah. It's nice.
She's been observing this whole time.
She rips him out of
his skull. What I really like is that this is a really nice role for her.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not a starring role. It's definitely a supporting role. Mm-hmm. But she's still, she does just the right thing with it.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is also the 70s, too, where they didn't overwrite the female characters because they had to be PC, or it's like, oh, well,
some of them are being PC. It's just a matter of overwriting because there's a star.
Well, or just because, well, we don't want to use a female actor in a diminishing way. We actually want to be able to, you know, give her as much screen, because that's one of the complaints with a lot of female actresses is there's not a lot of great roles out there. Whereas back then it was like, you know, hey, it was a great role. Doesn't matter the size. Doesn't matter how much dialogue.
But that has nothing to do with being PC. That has to do with there not being enough, you know, roles for women to play, or well enough written ones, or that. Well, that has nothing to do with that.
Sure it does. If they're going to overwrite in order to compensate to make them feel comfortable or to make them feel like they're getting a fair shake. Mm.
No, that has to do with the matter of star quality, you know, star power you have. You come onto a film and say, Christian Bale is a good example. Uh-huh. Terminator 4.
But he's not a female, so he's not a good example.
He came onto the film. I basically, it's like, I think this role should be bigger, and that was part of the whole problem with that. So I don't think it has anything to do with it being female. I think it has to do with everything to do with actors being able to have power over films.
I thought that was great how he let his paranoia tell her to not, you know, tell anyone. Yeah, what's that?
Equus. Peter Schaefer play? Oh, my God.
You never saw the play where he screws a horse?
Oh.
I did not see that.
Hey,
I wanted
Harry Potter was in it.
Really?
Now, here's the scene where he talks about history.
Yeah, it's a great scene.
Yeah. Actually, it was done as a film with Richard Burton.
Nice. Scope composition there between the two of them, back and forth.
That's very nice.
Which was a big deal. Great once job. Again, this is, what, yeah, this water, is all, this all during Watergate time. Well, I mean, what was, you know?
Yeah, I wouldn't mind having the bloody part as long as I knew why I was having the bloody part. Now it's like there's nothing's just everything's out of focus.
Yeah,
that's also nice because to make a good bad guy is they have to be doing it for good reasons.
Yeah, he's humanized,
right? Otherwise you got just some villain. Assume that doesn't make. And villains usually aren't villains. They're usually good people that are right. This is a
yeah, I love
I
it.
I like the music he puts on.
Yeah.
I'm like,
of course, yeah.
Yeah, what an interesting.
Right where I've got you. Yeah, it's perfect. But I like that scene right there, the one just before this one, where the two of them have worked with each other for how many years, and now they're actually getting to know each other because of this incident. They've worked probably together for 10, 15 years, and now they're actually, hey.
Yeah. Well, I also got the fact that
have a conversation.
He was asking him, are you right for this job? Meaning, are you willing to play ball with us? Yes. Because he realized Higgins is figuring it out.
Yeah.
Right. Basically, what's going to have to be done? And probably it's something Higgins hasn't had to do before, which is basically do what's going to be the outcome of this scene.
And you know what I like? That they didn't go...
Stop right.
Just always irritating. It's like nails on a blackboard.
It was the radio. It was the radio. It wasn't a record. I love that.
But they had records back then in 75.
What's a record, Tim? Hmm.
It's petroleum. It's it's petroleum.
Who are you? Remember what the guy said in the hall? He said, who are you?
Mm.
I like how gently he grabs him.
It's great.
How he's jutting his jaw out now. He's like,
it's great. Redford is such a great physical actor, not in how he uses his body and his mannerisms and everything.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
And that's why I compare him to Clooney, because Clooney does the same thing.
And when he does something, it doesn't look forced at all. It looks like he's natural and controlled.
And I like how he's just all piecing it together. No one tells him, and he figures it out.
Interesting.
I know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, even in 75.
Well, because back then, this is right after the oil embargo.
Yeah, exactly.
And I don't know if you all are...
Well, you know, we put Saddam Hussein in power.
Sure.
Did you know that?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
No, but hang on. But back before there was an oil embargo. Yeah. OPEC had an oil embargo, and basically you had to get gas. Like, you had your day of the week, if you had, depending on your license number, you get either your gas on a alternating days, and there were lines to get gas.
Yeah.
Oh.
Nice.
I mean, this movie never ceases to surprise. It's amazing.
It's almost a little frustrating when you see that we've not come very far in this amount of time. It's really? We stuck our hand back in the same cookie jar?
Oil is money, and money is power, and it always circles around.
Also, if you want, want to say who's really running the military.
Well, money runs everything, but that's a whole different thing.
And boy, he's swift right here, too. He doesn't jack around.
Oh, yeah.
This guy thinks,
look at Redford. Redford's just like...
That's good acting. Yeah.
That's racist. It was predictable. Yeah.
Bam.
That was a great jump. Bam.
That's a little taken right out of the history books of the famous Pulitzer Prize winning photograph.
Right.
Yeah.
From Vietnam. Pow, pow, pow. Right in the ear, boy.
And
well,
so,
of course,
he's
except
like,
for the brain
like,
matter pop.
It's like, what the hell? I think I read somewhere the exterior of the house is somewhere in Pasadena. Yeah. Because there's nothing in Chevy Chase that looks like that. Potomac maybe, but not Chevy Chase. I like how he's out of breath.
Well, yeah. He's killed a man.
I like how Redford finally has some stubble.
Yeah,
that's been coming the past few scenes.
Well, 2 days, come on.
Well, we're on to day three is coming.
Yeah. I don't need to honor that contract anymore.
That's right.
And of course, this is harkening back to, you know, all the hitman movies of the 60s and stuff like that. I think there were still some in the 70s.
Turn out the lights and there's still lights.
I guess there's still hitman movies. Hitman movies drive me crazy. I just think it's like a genre that's just been overdone and overdone. It's like, what else can you do with it?
Yeah.
Matador was pretty cool, but they failed where...
Matador was a hitman movie?
Pierce Brosnan should have gotten the other guy to do it. That's where they didn't make the full arc. Yeah,
this is where things fall apart for me, just a little bit.
Where he tries to recruit him?
He basically does, and somehow, you know, Turner contemplates it for a second. I'm like, what? In other words, I don't know where Turner is now. In his head.
I didn't interpret that he contemplated joining. I got that he just took him a moment to figure out what the guy was doing. And then he was very clear in saying, "No way, I love America." I like how he tells them. That's nice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, here's an interesting thought. Do you think that they've actually put out the hit on Turner? What are their plans for Turner? I mean, they had Joubert kill Atwood, but do they have any plans for Turner right now?
Well, that's what I got in the last scene when Higgins shows up. He was there to kill him.
But to get Atwood. I always interpret it as being to get Atwood. Is it to kill Turner too?
No. Yeah, at the end. We'll see in the next scene. The car pulls up.
This is interesting.
Maybe he is contemplating it.
See, right there. Yeah. I would find it tiring. I was like, what? Also, big reminder, this is during the Cold War.
Mm-hmm.
So... there was technically another side. There was the Soviet Union. There was the Soviet bloc.
It's a nice way of saying no thank you.
Right. Not on the nose.
Yeah.
It'd be interesting to know what instigated that dialogue. Like, was that something spoken about that Redford wanted to put it in for American pride and all that kind of stuff, or did it come straight out of the book? Or
I think it was basically he doesn't know anything different. He wants to still retain his life somehow.
Right. But did you hear what he said? He goes, "Here's the gun for that day," cutting to
that day.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I totally believe that they were sent here to kill Turner.
He's got quite the voice to pop across that street like
that. That's right.
busy New York Street, over music, over cars.
Lighthouse for the Blind.
Now, didn't he say it was to be like the first day of spring and there's Santa Claus still out there?
Well, no, this is only the same day.
This is day three.
After he shaved.
Three days of the condor.
Smiling that smile.
Yeah.
This is day three.
Ah, we had a lot of people watching filming. The reflections are in the window behind them. They had cornered off.
It's not as bad as The Sentinel. You ever seen The Sentinel?
No.
Oh, man. This is a... Oh, there's a couple of shots where it's egregious.
Talk about so foretelling, huh?
Wow. Remember watching this for years? That didn't mean anything. Oh, okay. And then along comes the Iraq War. It's like, holy crap.
Yeah. And the Iraq War now is 20 years old. It's crazy.
It is freaking nuts.
Nutty, nutty, nutty. Supposing.
It's really interesting. He keeps on looking up to see if they're where they're supposed to be.
Yeah.
It's very interesting that I don't think this is looped. This is location sound. It's very good.
Well, it's one shot, so they're not cutting in and out. That's good.
Yeah, I like that line.
Yeah. It's still oil.
That's one thing. It's still oil.
Nice close up.
Also, back then, there was definitely concern about having enough access to oil and resources. There's definitely concerns of that. I mean, look at Soylent Green as being a good indication of that.
Just with a few cuts and inserts, you're able to figure out what he did.
Yep. Very nicely done.
And this is where I think, it's another little trope I'm not a big fan of. It's like, you tell the papers and they'll do right, and then the right people will be arrested. It's like at the end of the Bourne Ultimatum, the bad people are arrested. I'm like, no.
That's right. No. That's right.
But then again, what he says is
but
that
he also makes it sure. He's letting you know it's hopeless.
If they don't print it?
Yeah, exactly. That's excellent. He doesn't look so sure.
Yeah, that was a question.
Yeah, it was. That was great. That's like the first time he says something that he doesn't really quite sure that he believes.
Right. And
I like that stop.
I do too. That's right.
And then they stop do an optical, optical zoom in. Well, almost, and then they go to the music.
Yeah, that's nice.
Hmm. Yeah, baby. Reminds me of the end of Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. The zoom in on.
Oh, well, yeah.
So would you rather play the tall, thin man or the beefy man?
I want to play Jimmy.
I want to play Alice the Lieutenant.
I have big props to Dave Grusin. I know this is groovy 70s music, but I love this soundtrack. Santa Claus. There you go.
Well, it did da.
And that's da-da. It. That's the credits.
Oh,
and yeah. That's why all the credits were front loaded. Yeah, I mean that's the way it was back in the day. They'd front load the credits, and at the end, sure. You know, you're just out. It's like Vertigo. Vertigo ends, you know, and boom, cut to credit. Then they just you're out. There's no credit.
And now we're what at least 6 minutes for end credits on movies.
At least
two or three songs, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
So anyway, all right.
Good stuff, Maynard.
Awesome. This film
still holds up.
Still rocks.
Oh,
still
holds up. So.
Still rocks the house. Almost perfect. Just a few tiny, tiny little things, but it's okay.
It's a good film.
I will forgive it.
Yeah.
Forgive it.
Very absorbing film.
Any new observations overall about this?
Yeah, I mean, you know, just, I mean, the obvious to me is, like, you see why Robert Redford was such a star at the time. I mean, you know, and Faye Dunaway as well, but him. Mm-hmm. As a male leading actor, and to do the work he did over the short period he did.
So if it were made today, who would be doing the part?
Tom Cruise.
In today's
Tom Cruise did this with the Mission Impossible
Brad
films.
Pitt.
Oh, well.
Well, I think this. My thing was Eagle.
Can anyone do this? Yeah, but Shia LaBeouf is no Robert Redford.
Shia LaBeouf is
I not hear a you, and I hear what you're saying. but I think he's fabulous. And I look forward to working with him someday.
Who, Shia LaBeouf?
Yes.
Yeah, I think he's amazing, too. And Jerry Bruckheimer got it.
I didn't think say he's a bad actor.
I think Megan Fox is amazing.
Robert Redford's awesome.
Somehow I just had no desire to see Eagle Eye. Just none whatsoever.
Really?
She wasn't in...
I've still not seen it.
What, Eagle Eye? No, Megan Fox was in Transformers.
Yeah, but because of Shia, I've not... I just couldn't see him as being an adult that... would be able to carry off that role, and even right when I saw the trailer, I was like,
Transformers?
No, Eagle Eye.
Oh, Eagle Eye. Oh, I just, the movie, just, I didn't even make a difference if he was in it or not. I just, no desire to see it. Did anyone see Spy Game, actually?
No.
Which was kind of touted as like, oh, well, you know, similar, because Redford is in it, and that kind of thing, and Brad Pitt's in it.
Brad Pitt with him.
Yeah.
And Brad Pitt is a younger Redford to me. He's the golden child.
River Runs Through It.
River Runs Through It, that's right.
Cast him as his younger self.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's a golden child. As far as like mythological slots go, they're right on the same play. I mean, you look at Jeremiah Johnson and something like that, and then you look at something
Brad
like Legend
totally
of the Fall.
Yeah, Brad could totally do something like this.
Mm-hmm.
They're the same guys.
Well, what's great about this film is that Redford, I mean, this is a one-person film. He carries the whole film. It's all about him.
You know,
he's part of a little community, still just a little separate, and then he's just all on his own and dealing with all of these other players. But it's all about him and his psyche.
Well, and that's the thing. How many actors today would be able to do that with pretty much 95% of the screen time and just carry everything like that and be engaging like that, you know?
There are a few. Like you said, Brad
Johnny
Pitt,
Depp.
Ed Norton, Johnny Depp.
George Clooney. But, you know, Johnny Depp has done a couple of his little things, and maybe it's just because of the quality of the film as well, but didn't hold the screen as much.
You need the right kind of film, too,
exactly.
Because not every Redford film allows him to carry. There's some not-so-good ones out there.
They all have their...
Well, exactly. That's what I'm saying. This is a nice confluence of all the elements coming together with the subject matter and the time and everyone in their careers.
Mm-hmm. It's good. And Cindy Pollack, what great directing in that.
Boy, yes. Let me tell you. Left too soon.
I love it.
Too soon.
I agree.
So, John, boy, you really had a field day with that 75-minute.
Oh
mark.
Yeah, John, we kind of left this the structure Man, thing. How did it go in the How did it go in the last act?
That was you had the big final showdown with Higgins on the street, and it looked like he won. But the nice twist on that was Higgins had that comeback line of, "What if they don't print it?" And it was nice working with you guys. I'm noticing actor stuff more. And I could see it in Robert Redford's eyes that last time was like he wasn't sure if they were going to print it or not, which was great. Because through the whole thing, everyone looked so confident at certain times. And he knew what he's doing, da da da. And all of a sudden, he was like, "Oh man,
what if they don't?"
Exactly.
Damn. I mean, I think why this appeals to me is just it takes the detective story and it just leaps for it every time, and it leaps in a way that you can follow it, and it just deepens, and the breadth of everything that's going on is just incredible. And they use the character of Joe Turner to say, "This is what's going on," and by him saying it, you find out. I'm like,
Only on a few occasions do they fall into spoon feeding the audience the information. Mm-hmm. And they do that for the reason of, okay, let's not waste time, and we could sit here and try to be cute. But
I didn't feel patronized at all.
Except for when you guys said that he would already have known the area code.
But
DC.
You know, that's
right. That was the exception, and that helped also when he did with the 202 showed up later, so he could say it out loud.
But that's also allowing the audience to. I feel like they're thinking.
There was
about
no.
It.
Yeah. You move the graves, but you what? You move the headstones, but you left the bodies.
Yeah.
You move the three times in a row. Times in a row.
What was that?
Poltergeist.
It's Poltergeist. Oh. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think I needed the third time for me to get it. So well, anything else anyone has to say other than this is
quite enjoyable.
Awesome film. And if you've listened to this and you haven't seen it, definitely watch it. So on that note, this has been Serge Delpierre.
John H. Ruby.
Tim McMillan.
Curtis Nelson.
And this has been Film Grok. Good night.